In this segment, we will begin our discussion of computerized provider order entry, or CPOE. The aspects of CPOE we will discuss in this segment and the one that follows include a definition, rationale, best practices for implementation, usage, efficacy, and some of the challenges in implementing it. So what exactly is CPOE? Well, there's actually a website that is maintained by the research program of Dr. Joan Ash, an OHSU faculty member, called CPOE.org. This website defines CPOE as a computer system that allows direct entry of medical orders by the person with the licensure and privileges to do so. Now, clinical decision support is usually viewed as an essential component of CPOE to obtain its full potential, and this, of course, causes many of its challenges. Another term that we'll talk about briefly, but is important to know, is e-prescribing. E-prescribing is a subset of full CPOE where the ordering is limited to just prescribing. And we'll see that there are a number of initiatives that are focused on e-prescribing as opposed to the full spectrum of CPOE. CPOE truly exemplifies everything we have discussed and will discuss about biomedical informatics. All of the key themes play out in CPOE. First of all, it's about information and not technology. It's used at the place where clinical decision support can have the most impact, the writing of medical orders. Many of you have seen this quote, either by this author or others, who have noted that the single most expensive piece of equipment in a hospital is the doctor's pen because of the orders it can write and the charges that it can generate. All of the issues that play out in CPOE implementation are those that are crucial to informatics: organizational structure, attention to workflow, healthcare provider autonomy, you name it. And yes, even technology becomes very important with CPOE. Systems must be usable, they must have very fast response time. So I think you'll agree that everything about CPOE really mirrors the entire field of informatics. So what is the rationale for CPOE? Well, one of the big ones is medical errors and patient safety, which we've already discussed, and as we know, is a common cause of injury and death. In addition, analysis of prescribing errors has shown that many of them could potentially be detected and intercepted with CPOE. Some of the early studies without full-blown CPOE, with only, I guess you could say, partial CPOE, showed that there was benefit. For example, when test ordering was accompanied by either past results or showing the costs of tests, it was found that you could dissuade physicians from ordering unnecessary tests. Likewise, the antibiotic assistant at LDS Hospital in Salt Lake City showed that decision support could improve antibiotic selection, decrease costs, decrease adverse drug events, and decrease the hospital length of stay. So clearly, there's potential here being shown for the value of CPOE. In an article describing its potential benefits, Cooperman noted a number of healthcare processes that could be improved. It could, for example, streamline the order entry process by allowing doses to be selected from menus and complete orders to be required, not then requiring the physician to be chased down. It could provide information to the clinician, such as showing relevant lab results, guidelines, and guided dosing algorithms. And of course, it could perform checks of various kinds of interactions like drug-drug, drug allergy, drug lab, dose ceilings, and drug patient characteristics. There are a number of best practices that have been noted for implementing CPOE, and probably the best list actually comes from the Ten Commandments for Clinical Decision Support by David Bates and colleagues, who note the following. First, speed is everything. You'll see this over and over in informatics. Systems must respond quickly. Clinical decision support should anticipate needs and deliver in real time. They should fit into the workflow. Little things can make a big difference for clinicians if you can save them time or prevent mistakes. Physicians will resist completely stopping doing something. They should ideally be offered alternatives. Similarly, changing direction is easier than stopping, so getting people on the right path is more important than blocking them. Simple interventions work best. Users should only be asked for additional information that's truly needed. Anyone who's implementing CPOE or clinical decision support should monitor its impact, obtain feedback, and be prepared to modify when the data suggests doing so. Finally, the knowledge that is used in decision support must be well managed and maintained. There are also a number of best practices in organizations when implementing CPOE. Many authors have written about the necessity of organizational readiness. A couple references here that I provide are a little bit dated, but still give the key ideas. So Cooperman has listed out some of the key aspects that are needed in organizations. Clearly, the technology must be ready, so the technology infrastructure, but of course we know that technology is only part of it. There must be clinician buy-in and involvement and training of them to make sure that they know how to use the specific system being implemented. There must be adequate support, and the key need for support is at the go live. Many organizations will put individuals in units, provide initially 24/7 coverage to launch CPOE, and there must be prompt attention to any problems that arise, which there are sure to be. There's also a tool for CPOE readiness that has been developed and published by Stabline. Now, one of the issues that implementers of CPOE might face is, should we do an entire organization, i.e. hospital, at once, the so-called Big Bang approach, or do we do a phased rollout unit by unit? The previous adage was against the Big Bang approach. However, a growing number of organizations have found that the Big Bang approach can work effectively if it's well planned. Though Cooperman has argued that when you implement advanced clinical decision support, that it may be better to phase it in. Another best practice is the use of order sets. These streamline order entry by reducing the number of steps it takes to put in orders. So order sets will consist of all the directions about things like vital signs and rotating the patient, orders for tests and treatments, and order sets are usually based on a specific diagnosis or a treatment that's going to be carried out, or perhaps a medical specialty. When order sets are implemented, we then have the ability to provide better guideline-based or ideally evidence-based care. But order sets must be modifiable for local practices. There's growing amount of experience with order sets, and the consensus is that they are best managed at the departmental level, So that is, there should not be order sets for an entire institution, nor should there be order sets for every last individual. Rather, the ideal process is to get departments, such as family medicine, orthopedic surgery, etc., to communicate better about consensus practices and build those into the order sets, and then a reasonable number of order sets can be maintained, and again, there's still the ability to override individual elements when it's appropriate to do so. So this is what a CPOE screen might look like. Here we're ordering a chest x-ray on a patient. There are a number of quick orders in the system so that the required information can be entered quickly. And once all the information's there, the order can be entered. As you know, there are challenges in implementing CPOE. It's not a mere computer application that you just install on the workstations. It really takes a whole organization to implement it. Joan Ash, the OHSU faculty member who has been very involved in people and organizational issues related to CPOE, was the lead author on a consensus statement published in 2003 about implementing CPOE. Other of her research has shown that, like many large-scale IT applications, CPOE success in implementation is very dependent on a variety of what she calls special people. This includes the administrative leadership of the organization, from the CEO, who provides top-level support and vision, the CIO, who implements that vision, the CMIO, who interprets for and influences his or her peers. Clinical leadership is absolutely essential in something like CPOE. There need to be champions, that is, individuals who support the process. There needs to be engagement of opinion leaders who provide a balanced view for the entire clinical staff. And there even needs to be attention to the curmudgeons. These are the naysayers who, if you can actually win over, can be some of the most constructive advocates. And of course, the support staff is very important to engage to make sure they're committed to achieving a successful result. So who's using CPOE? Well, there are a number of ways that it can be measured, and probably the most comprehensive study, even though it's a few years old now, laid out the proper way to measure it. So some of the things that you can measure include the availability of CPOE. So is it available for use by physicians? What is the inducement? Do they voluntarily use it, or are they required to do so? What is the participation? So what are the percentage of physicians who are using CPOE? And what's the saturation? What percentage of all orders are actually entered using CPOE? So the most recent large-scale survey shows that its use in the United States is still very modest. Ash and colleagues, one of which was me, surveyed 964 hospitals and attained a 65% response rate, which is pretty good for this type of research. Availability was quite small, with 10% stating complete availability, 6% partial, and the other 84% of hospitals saying it was not available. And even for those who had CPOE, it was required for slightly less than half of the physicians in the hospital. So we probably want to know if there are clinical benefits of CPOE. Does it actually improve patient care? There have been a number of studies over the years,
And the studies reported on this slide are some of the first ones that were done that started to show its benefits. Back in 1993, Tierney and colleagues at the Regan Streef Institute in Indianapolis found that CPOE led to a 12.7% decrease in total patient charges during a hospitalization and nearly 1 day shorter length of stay. David Bates, in the first of his many studies, showed that non-intercepted serious medication errors decreased 55% from 10.7 events per 1,000 patient days to 4.86 events per 1,000 patient days, and preventable adverse drug events were reduced by 17%. Bates also showed that CPOE could be beneficial in reducing redundant laboratory tests, so laboratory tests that were ordered that probably weren't necessary. Teich and colleagues found that CPOE could improve prescribing behavior of equally efficacious but less costly medications. They looked at a number of different medications, such as expensive ones like ondansetron, which is used for nausea in cancer chemotherapy patients, and finding that either guiding the right dose or suggesting an equally effective alternative could provide the same benefits for the patient at much reduced cost. And finally, Overage and colleagues, also in Indiana, looked at the need for and use of corollary orders, so orders that must be done when certain treatments are instituted. For example, the monitoring of kidney function in aminoglycoside antibiotics, or the monitoring of the coagulation profile when anticoagulation medications are used. And Overinch and colleagues found that there was increased use of these corollary orders as appropriate by about 25%. Since those initial studies, however, a more mixed picture has emerged. In one pediatric critical care unit studied by Potts and colleagues, prescribing errors were nearly eliminated, but many potential adverse drug events still occurred, mainly because these were not detected by the clinical decision support system. In the highly computerized VA hospital in Salt Lake City, an analysis by Nebaker and colleagues found that there was a higher than expected incidence of adverse drug events, believed at least in part due to more vigilant monitoring for such events. However, 27% of the adverse drug events that occurred were attributed to the type that things like CPOE and clinical decision support were supposed to eliminate. Finally, in another study of pediatric patients by Walsh and colleagues, commercial CPOE reduced the non-intercepted serious errors by only 7%, and there were no change in injury rates. And also in the study, there were numerous user interface problems that were identified. There have also been some more recent studies, and of course, when enough studies are published, you have an enterprising researcher who does a systematic review looking at all of them. One study was an analysis of the results of 6 hospitals in Massachusetts and an attempt to generalize this to other hospitals. So the baseline rate of preventable adverse drug events was 10.4% of all patients, and it was estimated through the experience of these hospitals that CPOE with decision support could reduce this by 80%. This would result in annual savings in an average hospital of around $2.7 million. And The bigger financial picture is with an investment up front of $2.1 million and an annual maintenance cost of $435,000 that a hospital could break even with the CPOE implementation from a purely financial standpoint in 26 months. So Ammonworth was the first person to publish a systematic review, and in her review, there were 23 of 25 studies about CPOE that looked at reduction in error rate and found that the relative reduction in error rate in these different studies ranged anywhere from 13 to 99%. And six studies looked at the relative reduction in potential adverse drug events and found it happened by 35 to 98%. This study also found that homegrown systems achieved better results, which of course always brings question to the average hospital, which will likely introduce a commercial system. Now, there was another systematic review that looked at the methodology of some of these studies and found it to be suspect. They tended to be either small studies or they had some either internal or external validity issues. So probably the bigger picture is that we need to look at all these benefits with a grain of salt. Finally, just some other research results that are of interest. One concerns the perceptions of drug-drug interaction alerts by both prescribers and pharmacists. There was a study done of these individuals in VA centers that have CPOE to get their perceptions on drug-drug interaction alerts. Both the prescribers and pharmacists had a generally positive view of these alerts, but felt they should be accompanied by management alternatives and more information so they would have guidance on what to do when the alerts appeared. Another study surveyed physicians and their perceptions of clinical decision support, finding that there was some skepticism about its ability to reduce errors and also concern about its impact on the workflow. Finally, one study looked at formulary decision support. So this is one type of decision support that looks at guiding prescribers on the use of preferred medications, so medications that are on the formulary and the preferred alternatives when equally efficacious medications exist. Typically on a formulary, these medications will be there because some sort of financial arrangement has been arranged to make these particular medications cheaper and the preferred alternative. So this study looked at the use of formulary decision support systems, finding that they did lead to an increase in the use of these preferred medications and a concomitant decrease in the more expensive medications. But again, presuming everything is equally clinically efficacious, and was estimated to be able to save about $845,000 per 100,000 patients, which starts to add up to real money when you're talking about millions of individuals.
It's also well known that CPOE must include patient-specific clinical decision support to be effective. One study of CPOE focused on drug laboratory monitoring alerts and found no difference in adhering to advice for intervention from a CPOE system versus not having CPOE. And one of the big limitations of this system was that the alerting was passive. It was not targeted to specific actions. Likewise, another study showed that when clinical practice guidelines were easily available, but not tailored specific for the patient, there was no increased adherence in their use.